If adversity and poverty could bar you from access to God, it were indeed a deplorable condition, but, so far from this, you may go to Him as freely as ever. My God, says the Church, will hear me, Micah 7:7. Poor David, when stripped of all earthly comforts, could encourage himself in the Lord his God, and why cannot you? Suppose your husband or son had lost all at sea and should come to you in rags, could you deny the relation, or refuse to entertain him? If you would not, much less will God. Why then are you so troubled? Though your condition be changed, your Father's love is not changed. 5. What, if by the loss of outward comforts, God preserves your soul from the ruining power of temptation? Surely then you have little cause to sink your heart by such sad thoughts. Do not earthly enjoyments make men shrink and warp in times of trial? For the love of these, many have forsaken Christ in such an hour. He went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions, Matthew 19:22. If this is God's design, how ungrateful to murmur against him for it. We see mariners in a storm can throw overboard the most valuable goods to preserve their lives. We know it is usual for soldiers in a besieged city to destroy the finest buildings without the walls, in which the enemy may take shelter, and no one doubts that it is wisely done. Those who have gangrened limbs willingly stretch them out to be cut off, and not only thank, but pay the surgeon. Must God be murmured against, for casting over that which would sink you in a storm, for pulling down that which would assist your enemy in the siege of temptation, for cutting off what would endanger your everlasting life? Oh, inconsiderate, ungrateful man! Are not these things, for which thou grievest, the very things that have ruined thousands of souls? 6. It would much support thy heart under adversity, to consider, that God, by such humbling providences, may be accomplishing that for which you have long prayed and waited. And should you be troubled at that? Say, Christian, hast thou not many prayers depending before God, upon such accounts, as these that he would keep thee from sin, discover to thee the emptiness of the creature that he would mortify and kill thy lusts, that thy heart may never find rest in any enjoyment but Christ? By such humbling and impoverishing strokes, God may be fulfilling thy desire. Wouldst thou be kept from sin? Lo, he hath hedged up thy way with thorns. Wouldst thou see the creature's vanity? Thy affliction is a fair glass to discover it, for the vanity of the creature is never so effectually and sensibly discovered, as in our own experience. Wouldst thou have thy corruptions mortified? This is the way to have the food and fuel removed that maintain them, for, as prosperity begot and fed them, so adversity, when sanctified, is a means to kill them. Wouldst thou have thy heart rest nowhere but in the bosom of God? What better method could Providence take to accomplish your desire, than pulling from under thy head that soft pillow of creature delights on which you rested before? And yet you fret at this peevish child. How dost thou exercise thy father's patience? If he delay to answer thy prayers, thou art ready to say he regards thee not. If he does that which really answers the end of them, though not in the way you expect, you murmur against him for that, as if instead of answering he were crossing all thy hopes and aims. Is this ingenuous? Is it not enough that God is so gracious as to do what you desire? Must you be so impudent as to expect him to do it in the way which you prescribe? 7. It may support your heart to consider that in these troubles God is performing that work in which your soul would rejoice, if you saw the design of it. We poor creatures are clouded with much ignorance and are not able to discern how particular providences tend to the fulfillment of God's designs, and therefore, like Israel in the wilderness, are often murmuring, because providence leads us about in a howling desert, where we are exposed to difficulties, though then he led them and is now leading us, by the right way to a city of habitations. Psalm 107:7. If you could but see how God, in his secret counsel, has exactly laid the whole plan of your salvation, even to the smallest means and circumstances, could you discern the admirable harmony of divine dispensations, their mutual relations, together with the general respect they all have to the last end, had you liberty to make your own choice, you would, of all conditions in the world, choose that in which you now are. Providence is like a curious piece of tapestry, made of a thousand shreds, which single, appear useless, but put together they represent a beautiful history to the eye. As God does all things according to the counsel of his own will, of course, this is ordained as the best method to effect your salvation. Such an one has a proud heart, so many humbling providences I appoint for him. Such an one has an earthly heart, so many impoverishing providences for him. Did you but see this, I need say no more to support the most dejected heart. 8. It would much conduce to the settlement of your heart to consider that by fretting and discontent you do yourself more injury than all your afflictions could do. Your own discontent is that which arms your troubles with a sting, you make your burden heavy by struggling under it. Did you but lie quietly under the hand of God, your condition would be much more easy than it is. Impatience in the sick occasions severity in the physician. This makes God afflict the more, as a father a stubborn child that receives not correction. Besides, it unfits the soul to pray over its troubles, or receive the sense of that good which God intends by them. Affliction is a pill, which, being wrapped up in patience and quiet submission, may be easily swallowed, but discontent chews the pill and so embitters the soul. God throws away some comfort which he saw would hurt you, and you will throw away your peace after it. He shoots an arrow which sticks in your clothes, and was never intended to hurt, but only frighten you from sin, and you will thrust it deeper, to the piercing of your very heart, by despondency and discontent. 9. If thy heart like that of Rachel still refuses to be comforted, then do one thing more. Compare the condition you are now in, and with which you are so much dissatisfied, with the condition in which others are, and in which you deserve to be. Others are roaring in flames, howling under the scourge of vengeance, and among them I deserve to be. O my soul! Is this hell? Is my condition as bad as that of the damned? What would thousands now in hell give to exchange conditions with me? I have read, says an author, that when the Duke of Condé had voluntarily subjected himself to the inconveniences of poverty, he was one day observed and pitied by a lord of Italy, who from tenderness wished him to be more careful of his person. The good duke answered, "Sir, be not troubled, and think not that I suffer from want, for I send a harbinger before me, who makes ready my lodgings, and takes care that I be royally entertained." The lord asked him who was his harbinger. He answered, "The knowledge of myself and the consideration of what I deserve for my sins, which is eternal torment. When with this knowledge I arrive at my lodging, however, and provided I find it, methinks it is much better than I deserve. Why doth the living man complain, a man for the punishment of his sins? Lamentations 3:39. Thus the heart may be kept from desponding or repining under adversity. 3. The third season calling for more than ordinary diligence to keep the heart, is the time of Zion's troubles. When the church, like the ship in which Christ and his disciples were, is oppressed and ready to perish in the waves of persecution, then good souls are ready to be shipwrecked too, upon the billows of their own fears. It is true, most men need the spur rather than the reins in this case, yet some men sit down discouraged under a sense of the church's troubles. The loss of the ark cost old Eli his life. 1 Samuel 4:18, the sad posture in which Jerusalem lay made good Nehemiah's countenance change in the midst of all the pleasures and accommodations of the court, Nehemiah 2:2. But though God allows, yea commands, the most awakened apprehensions of these calamities, and in such a day calls to mourning, weeping, and girding with sackcloth, Isaiah 20:12. And severely threatens the insensible, Amos 6:1. Yet, it will not please him to see you sit like pensive Elijah, under the juniper tree. Lord God, it is enough, take away my life also, 1 Kings 19:4. No. A mourner in Zion you may and ought to be, but a self-tormentor you must not be. Complain to God you may, but complain of God though but by the language of your actions you must not. Now let us inquire how tender hearts may be relieved and supported, when they are even overwhelmed with the burdens and sense of Zion's troubles. I grant it is hard for him who preferreth Zion to his chief joy, to keep his heart that it sink not below the due sense of its troubles, yet this ought to and may be done, by the use of such heart-establishing directions as these. 1. Settle this great truth in your heart, that no trouble befalls Zion, but by the permission of Zion's God, and he permits nothing out of which he will not ultimately bring much good to his people. Comfort may be derived from reflections on the permitting, as well as on the commanding, will of God. Let him alone, it may be God hath bidden him, 2 Samuel 16:10. Thou couldst have no power against me, except it were given thee from above, John 19:11. It should much calm our spirits, that it is the will of God to suffer it, and that had he not suffered it, it could never have been, as it is. This very consideration quieted Job, Eli, David and Hezekiah. That the Lord did it, was enough to them, and why should it not be so to us? If the Lord will have Zion plowed as a field, and her goodly stones lie in the dust, if it be his pleasure that Antichrist shall rage yet longer, and wear out the saints of the Most High, if it be his will, that a day of trouble and of treading down, and of perplexity by the Lord God of hosts, shall be upon the valley of vision, that the wicked shall devour the man that is more righteous than he, what are we that we should contend with God? It is fit that we should be resigned to that will, whence we proceeded, and that he that made us should dispose of us as he pleases. He may do what seemeth him good without our consent. Doth poor man stand upon equal ground that he may capitulate with his Creator, or that God should render him an account of any of his matters? That we be content, however God may dispose of us, is as reasonable as that we be obedient, whatever he may require of us. But if we pursue this argument further, and consider that God's permissions all meet at last in the real good of his people, this will much more quiet our spirits. Do the enemies carry away the best among the people into captivity? This looks like a distressing providence, but God sends them thither for their good, Jeremiah 24:5. Does God take the Assyrian, as a staff in his hand, to beat his people with? The end of his subduing is, that he may accomplish his whole work upon Mount Zion, Isaiah 10:12. If God can bring much good of the greatest evil of sin, much more out of temporal afflictions, and that he will is as evident as that he can do so. For it is inconsistent with the wisdom of a common agent to permit anything which he might prevent, if he pleased to cross his great design, and can it be imagined that the most wise God should do so? As then, Luther said to Melanchthon, so say I to you, let infinite wisdom, power, and love, alone, for by these all creatures are swayed, and all actions guided, in reference to the Church. It is not our work to rule the world, but to submit to him that does. The motions of providence are all judicious, the wheels are full of eyes. It is enough that the affairs of Zion are in a good hand. 2. Ponder this heart-supporting truth. How many troubles soever are upon Zion, yet her King is in her. What? Hath the Lord forsaken his churches? Has he sold them into the enemy's hand? Does he not regard what evil befalls them that our hearts sink thus? Is it not shamefully undervaluing the great God and too much magnifying poor impotent men to fear and tremble at creatures, while God is in the midst of us? The Church's enemies are many and mighty, let that be granted, yet that argument with which Caleb and Joshua strove to raise their own hearts is of as much force now, as it was then. The Lord is with us, fear them not, Numbers 14:9. A historian tells us that, when Antigonus overheard his soldiers reckoning how many their enemies were and so discouraging one another, he suddenly stepped in among them with this question, and how many do you reckon me for? Discouraged souls, how many do you reckon the Lord for? Is he not an overmatch for all his enemies? Is not one almighty more than many mighties? If God be for us, who can be against us? Romans 8:31. What think you was the reason of that great examination Gideon made? Judges 6. He questions, he desires a sign, and after that, another, and what was the end of all this, but that he might be sure the Lord was with him and that he might but write this motto upon his ensign, the sword of the Lord, and of Gideon. So, if you can be well assured the Lord is with his people, you will thereby rise above all your discouragements, and that he is so, you need not desire a sign from heaven. Lo, you have a sign before you, even their marvelous preservation amidst all their enemies. If God be not with his people, how is it that they are not swallowed up quickly? Do their enemies want malice, power, or opportunity? No, but there is an invisible hand upon them. Let then his presence give us rest, and though the mountains be hurled into the sea, though heaven and earth mingle together, fear not, God is in the midst of Zion, she shall not be moved. 3. Consider the great advantages attending the people of God in an afflicted condition. If a low and an afflicted state in the world be really best for the Church, then your dejection is not only irrational, but ungrateful. Indeed, if you estimate the happiness of the Church by its worldly ease, splendor and prosperity, then such times of affliction will appear to be unfavorable. But if you reckon its glory to consist in its humility, faith, and heavenly-mindedness, No condition so much abounds with advantages for these, as an afflicted condition. It was not persecutions and prisons, but worldliness and wantonness that poisoned the church, neither was it the earthly glory of its professors, but the blood of its martyrs, that was the seed of the church. The power of godliness did never thrive better than in affliction, and was never less thriving than in times of greatest prosperity. When we are left a poor and an afflicted people, then we learn to trust in the name of the Lord, Zephaniah 3:12. Is it indeed for the saints' advantage to be weaned from love of and delight in ensnaring earthly vanities, to be quickened and urged forward with more haste to heaven, to have clearer discoveries of their own hearts, to be taught to pray more fervently, frequently, spiritually, to look and long for the rest to come more ardently? If these be for their advantage, experience teaches us that no condition is ordinarily blessed with such fruits as these, like an afflicted condition. Is it well then to repine and droop, because your Father consults the advantage of your soul rather than the gratification of your humors? Because He will bring you to heaven by a nearer way than you are willing to go? Is this a due requital of His love, who is pleased so much to concern Himself in your welfare? Who does more for you than He will do for thousands in the world upon whom He will not lay a rod or dispense an affliction to them for their good? Hosea 4:17. Matthew 15:14. But alas! We judge by sense and reckon things good or evil according to our present taste. 4. Take heed that you overlook not the many precious mercies which the people of God enjoy amidst all their trouble. It is a pity that our tears on account of our troubles should so blind our eyes that we should not see our mercies. I will not insist upon the mercy of having your life given you for a prey, Jeremiah 39:18, nor upon the many outward comforts which you enjoy, even above what were enjoyed by Christ and His precious servants, of whom the world was not worthy. But what say you to pardon of sin, interest in Christ, the covenant of promise, and an eternity of happiness in the presence of God, after a few days are over? Oh, that a people entitled to such mercies as these should droop under any temporal affliction, or be so much concerned for the frowns of men and the loss of trifles. You have not the smiles of great men, but you have the favor of the great God. You are perhaps diminished in temporal, but you are thereby increased in spiritual and eternal goods. You cannot live so plentifully as before, but you may live as heavenly as ever. Will you grieve so much for these circumstances as to forget your substance? Shall light troubles make you forget weighty mercies? Remember, the true riches of the church are laid out of the reach of all enemies. What, though God do not in His outward dispensations distinguish between His own and others? Yea, what, though His judgments single out the best and spare the worst? What, though an Abel be killed in love and a Cain survive in hatred, a bloody Dionysius die in his bed, and a good Josiah fall in battle? What, though the belly of the wicked be filled with hidden treasures, and the teeth of the saints with gravel stones? Still there is much matter of praise, for electing love has distinguished, though common providence has not, and while prosperity and impunity slay the wicked, even slaying and adversity shall benefit and save the righteous. 5. Believe that how low soever the church be plunged under the waters of adversity, she shall assuredly rise again. Fear not, For as surely as Christ arose the third day, notwithstanding the seal and watch upon him, so surely Zion shall arise out of all her troubles and lift up her victorious head over all her enemies. There is no reason to fear the ruin of that people, who thrive by their losses and multiply by being diminished. Be not too hasty to bury the church, before she is dead. Stay till Christ has tried his skill, before you give her up for lost. The bush may be all in a flame, but shall never be consumed, and that because of the goodwill of him that dwelleth in it. 6. Remember the instances of God's care and tenderness over his people in former difficulties. For above 1800 years the Christian church has been in affliction, and yet it is not consumed. Many a wave of persecution has gone over it, yet it is not drowned. Many devices have been formed against it, hitherto none of them has prospered. This is not the first time that the Hamans, Esther 3, and Ahithophels have plotted its ruin, that a Herod has stretched out his hand to vex it. Still it has been preserved from, supported under, or delivered out of all its troubles. Is it not as dear to God as ever? Is he not as able to save it now as formerly? Though we know not whence deliverance should arise, yet the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations. 2 Peter 2:9. 7. If you can derive no comfort from any of these considerations, try to draw some out of your very trouble. Surely this trouble of yours is a good evidence of your integrity. Union is the ground of sympathy. If you had not some rich adventure in that ship, you would not tremble, as you do, when it is in danger. Besides, this frame of spirit may afford you this consolation, that, if you are so sensible of Zion's trouble, Jesus Christ is much more sensible of and solicitous about it than you can be, and he will have an eye of favor upon them that mourn for it. Isaiah 57:18. 4. The fourth season, requiring our utmost diligence to keep our hearts, is the time of danger and public distraction. In such times the best hearts are too apt to be surprised by slavish fear. If Syria be confederate with Ephraim, how do the hearts of the house of David shake, even as the trees of the wood, which are shaken with the wind. Isaiah 7:2. When there are ominous signs in the heavens, on the earth distress of nations, with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, then the hearts of men fail for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. Luke 21:25. Even a Paul may sometimes complain of fightings within, when there are fears without. 2 Corinthians 7:5. But, my brethren, these things ought not so to be. Saints should be of a more elevated spirit. So was David, when his heart was kept in a good frame. The Lord is my light, and my salvation, whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life, of whom shall I be afraid? Psalm 27:1. Let none but the servants of sin be the slaves of fear. Let them that have delighted in evil fear evil. Let not that which God has threatened as a judgment upon the wicked ever seize upon the hearts of the righteous. I will send faintness into their hearts in the land of their enemies, and the sound of a shaking leaf shall chase them. Leviticus 24:35. What poor-spirited men are those to fly at a shaking leaf! A leaf makes a pleasant, not a terrible noise. It makes indeed a kind of natural music, but to a guilty conscience, even the whistling leaves are drums and trumpets. But God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of love and of a sound mind. 2 Timothy 1:7. A sound mind, as it stands there in opposition to fear, is an unwounded conscience, not weakened by guilt, and this should make a man as bold as a lion. I know it cannot be said of a saint, as God said of Leviathan, that he is made without fear. There is a natural fear in every man, and it is as impossible to remove it wholly as to remove the body itself. Fear is perturbation of the mind, arising from the apprehension of approaching danger, and as long as dangers can approach us, we shall find some perturbations within us. It is not my purpose to commend to you a stoical apathy, nor yet to dissuade you from such a degree of cautionary preventive fear, as may fit you for trouble and be serviceable to your soul. There is a provident fear, that opens our eyes to foresee danger and quickens to a prudent and lawful use of means to prevent it. Such was Jacob's fear, Genesis 32. But it is the fear of diffidence, from which I would persuade you to keep your heart, that tyrannical passion which invades the heart in times of danger, distracts, weakens and usts it for duty, drives men upon unlawful means and brings a snare with it. Now let us inquire, how a Christian may keep his heart from distracting and tormenting fears in times of great and threatening dangers. There are several excellent rules for keeping the heart from sinful fear, when imminent dangers threaten us. 1. Look upon all creatures as in the hand of God, who manages them in all their motions, limiting, restraining and determining them at His pleasure. Get this great truth well settled by faith in your heart, and it will guard you against slavish fears. The first chapter of Ezekiel contains an admirable draft of providence. There you see the living creatures who move the wheels, namely the great revolutions of things here below, coming unto Christ, who sits upon the throne, to receive new instructions from Him. In Revelations, 6th chapter, you read of white, black and red horses, which are but the instruments God employs in executing judgments in the world, as wars, pestilence and death. When these horses are prancing and trampling up and down the world, here is a consideration that may quiet our hearts. God has the reins in His hand. Wicked men are sometimes like mad horses. They would stamp the people of God under their feet, but that the bridle of providence is in their mouths, Job 1:11-12. A lion at liberty is terrible to meet, but who is afraid of the lion in the keeper's hand? 2. Remember, that this God, in whose hand are all creatures, is your Father and is much more tender over you than you are or can be over yourself. He that coucheth you, coucheth the apple of mine eye, Zechariah 2:8. Let me ask the most timorous woman, whether there be not a great difference between the sight of a drawn sword in the hand of a bloody ruffian, and of the same sword in the hand of her own tender husband. As great a difference there is between looking upon creatures by an eye of sense and looking on them as in the hand of your God, by an eye of faith. Isaiah 54:5 is here very appropriate. Thy maker is thine husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, he is Lord of all the hosts of creatures. Who would be afraid to pass through an army, though all the soldiers should turn their swords and guns towards him, if the general of that army were his friend or father? A religious young man being at sea with many other passengers in a great storm, and they being half dead with fear, he only was observed to be very cheerful, as if he were but little concerned in that danger. One of them demanding the reason of his cheerfulness, "So," said he, "it is because the pilot of the ship is my father." Consider Christ, first, as the King and Supreme Lord over the Providential Kingdom, and then, as your head, husband and friend, and you will quickly say, "Return unto my rest, O my soul." This truth will make you cease trembling and cause you to sing in the midst of danger. The Lord is King of all the earth, sing ye praise with understanding, Psalm 47:7. That is, let everyone that has understanding of this heart reviving and establishing doctrine of the dominion of our Father over all creatures, sing praise. 3. Urge upon your heart the express prohibitions of Christ in this case and let your heart stand in awe of the violation of them. He hath charged you not to fear. When ye shall hear of wars and commotions, see, that ye be not terrified, Luke 21:9. In nothing be terrified by your adversaries, Philippians 1:28. In Matthew 10 and within the compass of 6 verses, our Savior commands us thrice, not to fear man. Does the voice of a man make thee to tremble and shall not the voice of God? If thou art of such a timorous spirit, how is it that thou fearest not to disobey the commands of Jesus Christ? I think the command of Christ should have as much power to come as the voice of a poor word to terrify thy heart. I, even I, am he that comforteth you. Who art thou, that thou shouldst be afraid of a man that shall die, and of the Son of Man that shall be made as the grass, and forgettest the Lord thy Maker? Isaiah 51:12-13. We cannot fear creatures sinfully till we have forgotten God. Did we remember what He is and what He has said, we should not be of such feeble spirits. Bring thyself, then, to this reflection in times of danger. If I let into my heart the slavish fear of man, I must let out the reverential awe and fear of God, and dare I cast off the fear of the Almighty for the frowns of a man, shall I lift up proud dust above the great God? Shall I run upon a certain sin to shun a probable danger? O, keep thy heart by this consideration. 4.